I've shared everything I know about abusive behavior in both my podcast, Love and Abuse, my other podcast, and my highly effective program, Healed Being. Love and Abuse over at loveandabuse.com is geared toward those experiencing hurtful behavior, but is good for anyone that wants to learn about challenging or toxic behaviors in a relationship. And Healed Being over at healedbeing.com is where I help transform the lives of people who hurt those they love. Just wanted to share these resources just in case you want to change a difficult situation that you're in. Life presents the toughest challenges. Every day you are faced with decisions that test your ability to express who you really want to be in this world. We're told to keep saying affirmations and keep thinking positively, but what do you do when that stuff doesn't work? Welcome to the Overwhelmed Brain, where you'll learn to make decisions that are right for you so that you can create the life you want now. Hello and welcome to the show. My name is Paul Coliani. I want to help you learn the skills you need to deal with life's challenges in the most emotionally intelligent way. The show consists of my personal opinions and is meant for informational purposes only. Always seek a professional for your mental health and well-being. So glad that you are here as the music fades. We are here for another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain, and I'm going to bring it down a notch. I'm going to start this show with a little story. When I was, 15 years ago maybe, I was about 37, I guess, and I was kind of in the midst of mid-depression, and I decided that I really needed to get away from everything and everyone. This might have been right after I started healing, but I still felt depressed. And for those who've never felt depressed or want to know what it's like, I remember it being like this. I remember being emotionally devoid, like devoid of all emotions. But I still felt something. I still felt like, I don't know if unhappy is the word. I just remember it not being pleasant. And also, it was almost as if there were a deep sadness, but I couldn't connect with the sadness. I couldn't connect with that deeper part of myself. It just felt like there was a block there. And I remember the things that used to make me happy couldn't and didn't anymore. And the things that used to make me unhappy or sad couldn't or didn't anymore. It was a passionless place. And it felt, I felt alone, is really what it is. I felt alone. And that feeling wasn't loneliness. Like, those are very specific things. I can feel loneliness. I can feel sad. I can feel happy. But when you're depressed, it's like you can't access those feelings. It's like your emotions are blocked. And I'm only speaking for myself. For me, it felt like my emotions were blocked. And it makes sense to me now that I look back where I was at that time, because depression, the way I look at it, is when you suppress what you're really thinking, repress the emotions that are associated with what you're thinking, and then because you're doing the suppression of thought and repression of emotion, you stuff it way down, and it turns into a depressed state. And this is how I've seen depression for years after feeling it, experiencing it, and healing from it, and then being able to reflect on it, is that I've suppressed so many thoughts for so many years and repressed the emotions because I tended to be more people-pleasing and more accommodating than honest and authentic. And because of that, I lost myself, and I drowned myself with all these negative emotions and all these thoughts that I never expressed. I never let them out of my system. I never gave my emotions a voice. I just stuffed it down. I stuffed everything down. I stuffed what I was thinking and feeling until I filled up an emotional well down there, like an emotional pool that overflowed. And these are all the bad emotions in this emotional pool overflowing, filling up the foundation of who I am. And when I did that, it blocked all the good stuff. The good stuff is being able to connect with any emotion that you're feeling. If I wanted to get angry, I couldn't. I was depressed. If I wanted to feel sad, I couldn't. I was depressed. If I wanted to feel happy, of course not. I couldn't. I was depressed. I had all of this negativity inside of me, and it drowned out the true connection to my emotions. So like I said, it could be different for everyone, but this is how I went through it. It felt like I was in a dark room, sitting in a chair, and there was no crack of light anywhere. And I don't know why I was sitting in a chair, but I was in this dark room, and I could not find a way out. But when I pictured it back then, that's what it felt like, because I wanted to symbolize it. I wanted to symbolize what it felt like while I was experiencing it. It just felt like I was in this dark room, sitting in a chair. Like I couldn't even reach the light bulb, or if I did, I would find a locked door. It was just defeating. So I had this defeating feeling for a couple of years, or about a couple of years, and I started healing from it because I finally let my thoughts and emotions have a voice. And I've told this story on the show many times, but when I discovered that I was holding on to hate, and I was holding on to thoughts about people that I believed I shouldn't have, like I believed I shouldn't be holding on to hate, but I was holding on to it. I was holding on to it inside because I was denying myself the emotion. And I was denying myself the thoughts because I kept saying to myself, I shouldn't feel that. It's not right to feel that. It's not right to think that. And so I would withhold. I would repress. I would depress myself by repressing what was inside of me and suppressing those thoughts. And all this does is fill you with blockage. It fills you with this huge roadblock to your emotions when you do this. And so my story I'm getting back to is that during the very beginning of my healing, which is when I finally decided to speak my truth, I finally decided to be authentically me, which is saying out loud who I hated. I said it out loud and I felt it. I hate him so much. I felt it. I said it and I cried, and it felt really good to cry. I finally just let something out. I didn't let everything out, but I let something out. And that something was the very beginning of my healing. I believe when you give your thoughts and emotions a voice, the ones you've been denying, when they come out, they start to release the blockage. You start to move the road barriers out of the way so that you have a better path to your real emotions, because you've been covering them for so long when you're depressed. And I'm not saying this is the only way to depression. Like I said, a lot of people may experience it differently, but this is how it was for me. What used to make me feel happy no longer did. What used to make me feel sad or angry no longer did. It was just a blockage of everything I wanted to experience and should experience, because the emotional spectrum is ours to experience for a reason. I believe we all need to experience the gamut of emotions out there just to give what's inside of us a voice to get outside of us, to leave our body. And I mean, I don't mean to sound spiritual, but to leave our system so that the emotions don't fester inside of us. And, you know, mainly negative emotions. We don't want the negative emotions to sit in there and fester, because we become infected. And when we are infected with these suppressed thoughts and repressed emotions, that's how depression forms, and that's how we lose a connection with ourselves. Which leads me to my story. Right after I started healing, I realized I needed to get through all the blockages. And I was able to release some stuff. I admitted my hate. I felt it. And as soon as I felt it, I was able to release it, because that's what happens often, is that as soon as you admit something that you've been holding on to and you haven't wanted to admit it, but you finally do it, you are release it in a way. And sometimes you release it completely. And for me at that moment, I released the hate. I'd held on to it for so long, and then I released it by expressing it. But during my healing process, I realized I still am not connected to myself. I still feel like there's blockage. And so I decided, I told my girlfriend at the time, I said, I need to take a trip. I need to go away. I need to get away from it all. I need to revisit my history or revisit my childhood or something, because I cannot connect with myself. And I didn't say those words. I say them now, knowing that's what I needed to do back then. I needed to reconnect with myself, or get to me at the deepest level. Make that path, walk that path, open that path up so that I can connect with my true emotions again. And so I did. I planned a trip back to my home state in New England, where I was actually brought up. I was brought up in Massachusetts for a good 13 or 14 years. And I visited my hometown by myself. So I planned a trip, took the trip, visited my hometown by myself. I mean, I say by myself because I've never taken a trip like this by myself just to go on some tour through my childhood town. But that's what I did. This is the first time I've ever done this. And I didn't know if I was going to heal. I didn't know what this journey was going to do for me. I just felt like I needed to do it. And I think the need came from the thought that there was something that I was missing or didn't get enough of or couldn't connect with myself in childhood. So there was something missing in my childhood. There was something that I didn't get enough of in childhood, or I don't know. I couldn't put the pieces together. But I knew I had to go back to my hometown by myself. I didn't want anybody else. I didn't even tell my parents that were 2 hours away from my hometown that I could have visited them. I didn't tell them. I just went. And then when I arrived there, I got this really crappy hotel. It was awful. I just decided I didn't care. I'm there. I'm here for a reason. And got in the hotel, unpacked, and then I decided that I was going to take a little trip into this wooded area, into the woods. And because I remember when I was a kid, I loved hanging out in the woods. So one of the dots that I was connecting is that there were times in my life that I felt connected to myself. There were times in my life where I really felt comfortable. I was happy. I felt safe. And those were the times I spent walking through the woods. It sounds a little odd, maybe, but maybe not. Maybe you can resonate with this, but that was definitely me in nature as a child, because we had woods across the street, so I would do this a lot. I would go into the woods, I would build a little teepee out of sticks and leaves, and I would go traveling through the woods just to see where it took me. I don't recommend this. I don't know where the woods will take you, or if there are bears or whatever. I'm just saying, as a kid, this is what I did. This is where I played. And so I remembered this as an adult and decided that's what I was going to do. I was going to go back to Massachusetts and go travel in the woods for whatever reason. I just wanted to connect with the part of me that was there when I was a child. So I did that. I found this path and I went into the woods, and I think it was like a nature preserve or something like that. So it wasn't like just some random woods on somebody else's property. So I was going through the woods and I reached a point where the sun was shining through the trees and I could almost see beyond the woods into this clearing. And in that moment, it was really cold too, remember that. In that moment though, I just started crying. I just looked up at the sun and I just lost it. I just started crying and I couldn't stop for a while. And I have no idea what I was crying about. But now, as I reflect on it, and of course I've reflected on this many times, but especially now, And this is why I'm telling the story, especially now, I realize what was happening in that moment. And I realize how important a moment like that can be in our lives. A moment like that that truly connects with ourselves, that truly makes us feel ourselves at the deepest level, makes that connection to our innermost sense of being. And in that moment, that's what I felt. I felt that innermost sense of being. And I needed to be alone to experience it. I needed to be away from everything and everyone I knew, at least the people I had in my life at the time and the place I was living. I needed to be away from all of it. And what I learned over the years after reflecting upon all this, what I learned is that when you get away from it all, I'll use that as a vacation term, right? Get away from it all. When you get away from it all, what ends up happening is that you find yourself. You find who you are at the deepest level, and you connect with yourself. And I'm not saying you discover a whole new path of being and wisdom. I'm saying that you find who you are. It was like the person that was lost inside you finally sees someone to, how can I say this, rescue them, finally sees the person that they wanted to see most, themselves, but in a different way. It's like you're making a connection to the past and they're making a connection to the future. It's really strange. And if you've experienced this before, you know what I mean. But this true connection with who you are at the deepest level, that happened to me in the woods that day. And I cried, and when I stopped crying, boy, I felt different. I felt like I had fulfilled the reason for my trip. I felt like I had fulfilled that. And then I had a whole extra day to just hang out or walk around and see what things have changed. But that first day I arrived, and the first day I went into the woods, and that coldness, and you know, in a good way, that I felt cold, the air was cold, and the sun shining, it was just the perfect storm of components that made up an enlightening moment for me. And that moment changed my life. And I share this with you because I believe we do have, or we can have, moments like this. And sometimes we do have them, but I believe we can have moments like this. And should you have a moment like this? And I would say yes. This is why sometimes it's important to get away from everyone and everything you know. And as terrible as this sounds, isolate yourself. Be by yourself. This is how you find yourself sometimes. This may not work for everyone, but wow, when I was depressed, when I was starting to find my way out of that, that's what I had to do. I had to isolate myself. And doing that is what helped me connect with my true emotions, because crying never felt so good. Crying like that, where there was no reason at all. It was just a lot of stored energy inside of me. Crying helped me release something and move past that block. And after that day, my healing continued. You know, I wasn't immediately cured of depression, but it definitely accelerated it. It helped me reconnect with who I am. It helped me understand that I'm important, that I'm worthy, that I'm lovable, that I should exist, that I should be here. And it also made me realize that even though I love having people in my life, I don't need like everyone. I don't need certain people in my life. I don't need certain things in my life. I don't need certain jobs, you know, if they're really toxic. I don't need relationships that are really toxic. I just understood myself so much better. And this is kind of where I'm heading with this segment today, is that sometimes we don't know ourselves until we connect with ourselves at the deepest level. And sometimes we can't do that when there are other people in our lives. And don't take that the wrong way, because sometimes we are with people in our lives and we can't get rid of them. We can't get away from them. We actually have to be around them and be near them. There are obligations and responsibilities, and I get that. Sometimes you are stuck in a situation where you can't get away from anyone and everything. I was fortunate to be able to do that. And it only took 2 days for me. It only took 2 days. That's why I sometimes tell you that even if you can't get away from everyone and everything, there are parts of life that allow you to do that. Even the bathroom in the mall. It allows you to get away from everyone and everything. And sometimes that's not even possible. Sometimes you can't get away. Sometimes you have to bring your kid in. Sometimes you have to do things with other people. But I would say take advantage of the moments that you can grab to isolate yourself. If you're experiencing anything that I'm talking about now, if you are experiencing any type of depression or where you can't access your emotional state, your true emotions, the way you want to feel, if you can't access that happiness or that sadness and you want to, but you just can't do it, you might need to do this. You might need to isolate yourself and just be with you. This is very, I would say, present moment thinking. This is also removing all influences from your life, at least temporarily. Who am I without this person? Who am I without this job? Who am I without, you know, things like my clothes? Who am I without this haircut? Who am I? And you go deep within yourself. And sometimes it's hard to do that. Sometimes it's hard to think like that. Like, well, I don't know who I am. I'm me. Okay, well, what happens when we take everything you know and everyone you know out of the picture, and that is you? Who are you? And this isn't something that maybe you can answer, or maybe you know yourself well. All I'm saying today is sometimes you have to disconnect from the world and from people just to discover that. And sometimes that's scary. Sometimes, like me, I always had a fear of abandonment, had a fear of rejection. You know, in the past, I had to deal with this. So leaving people wasn't something that I wanted to do, but I knew something had to be done because something wasn't right inside of me. And when something doesn't feel right, I do believe it's important to reconnect with yourself, because you'll discover yourself at the deepest level. And when you discover that, suddenly what you feared and what you stressed about and what you worried about changes. I'm not saying it all goes away, but it changes, because it seems like your priorities change. It's almost like we can often walk around with fear. And because we have these fears, we make certain decisions based on what we fear. But when we reconnect with ourselves at the deepest level, and like I said, it might involve isolation, it might involve getting away from everything and everyone, and even connecting with your past, like I did. I connected with my childhood because I used to walk the town that I lived in by myself, and I think that's important. I think when you remember the times you felt most safe, maybe most happy, maybe most comfortable when you were a child, there's something in that. And for me, maybe isolation was the key. Maybe I just needed to be by myself fully, because I played a lot as a child by myself. This probably explains my introverted nature. But I was brought up in an alcoholic home, so it was very unsafe at home. I didn't feel safe at all. It was scary. So being outside, being by myself, felt natural to me. I felt much better outside, away from everyone and everything. So that's where I wanted to go again as an adult. I wanted to get into that space, and that's what I connected with. And this is what we need to do sometimes. When you don't feel right inside, when there's something going on, whether it's depression or you just think there's more to the world, it can be very helpful to remember a time when you were most comfortable, most safe, maybe even most happy, and figure out how to reconnect with that today. And I took a trip Maybe it's a trip for you. Maybe it's something else. How do you reconnect with yourself? And the answer to that is often found in the past. Now, there are people that will say, I never had comfort in childhood. I've never been happy. I'm willing to bet that there was a point where you felt safe, even for a few seconds. I'm willing to bet. I'm willing to bet a memory pops up for you right now that you felt safe and comfortable, at least in the moment. And there's something in that moment. There's something about that moment that you can reconnect with today. And it's going to be unique to you. I can't give a general answer that fits everyone, but it will be unique to you. And if you can find a way to reconnect with that, you might just do some healing. At least I hope. I hope that is healing for you in some way, shape, or form, like it was for me. I'm going to leave this right here, and when we come back, I'll probably shift gears again. Be right back after this. I woke up a few days ago and I couldn't believe what happened. For the first time in a long time, I didn't have a craving for caffeine. I thought something isn't right. I usually suffer from caffeine deficiency, but in that moment, I felt awake, focused, and productive and ready for the day. What happened? Magic Mind happened. It has become my daily routine, and not because I want to get rid of tea. I love tea. But what Magic Mind has done for me is allowed me to stop relying on tea to boost my day. Magic Mind is a wonderful little elixir that helps you stop procrastinating, putting a little pep in your step so that you can keep your energy levels steady throughout the day. Magic Mind reduces the need for caffeine and then keeps you productive because of specifically tailored ingredients like matcha, ashwagandha, lion's mane mushrooms, and more that each have a positive effect on not only increasing your body's resistance to stress, but also improving your physical and mental endurance. If you want to feel like 100% or as close to it as you can get, I recommend you visit magicmind.co/brain and use the discount code BRAIN when checking out to get 40% off your first subscription or 20% off your first purchase. That's two words together, magicmind.co/brain. Use the promo code BRAIN to get your discount. As of this recording, the code lasts 10 days, so jump on it while you can. And another thing that's going to help you with your daily routine is BetterHelp. Our sponsor, BetterHelp, is here to make sure your mental health is in check. They want you to feel better, and they offer such a wonderful and much-needed service by giving you access to professional therapists that want to help you feel better. I'm talking about the world's largest therapy service. BetterHelp has matched 3 million people with professionally licensed and vetted therapists who are all available 100% online. Plus, it's affordable. Isn't that refreshing? No waiting rooms, no traffic, no endless searching for the right therapist. Just fill out a brief questionnaire and you'll be matched with a therapist in no time. And if things aren't clicking with that one, you can easily switch to a new therapist anytime. It really couldn't be simpler. You know, a part of my healing was from therapy. The feeling of releasing sometimes years of pain is so liberating. BetterHelp is there to help you through the challenges. If you're looking for help, try BetterHelp at 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/brain. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/brain. Whatever you're dealing with, BetterHelp is there to help you. Welcome back. I've got one more subject to talk about today. It's a really quick one. It's something I've talked about before, and it's a question that I receive sometimes, which is a third chance worth considering? Think about anybody you've given a chance to, like, okay, I'll give you a second chance. This is your second chance. Let's see if it works out. It could be anything, a friendship, a romantic relationship, family. When you give someone a chance, you are offering the opportunity to try again. You're offering the opportunity to forget the past, move forward, and hope this thing that whatever happened doesn't happen again. The way I see it, the way I see second chances and third chances, is that there's no fourth chance. I don't give a fourth chance. This doesn't mean I wipe you out of my life. It just means I file what has happened in my brain so that I know how to categorize what has happened and who the person who did this to me, who they are. What does that mean? That means if somebody lies to me and then they say, I'm so sorry, I admit it, I lied, and that won't ever happen again. A second chance may come, no problem. But what if they lie again? Is there a third chance? Do you give somebody another chance after the second time? If you've listened to my show, Love and Abuse, you've heard me talk about this subject probably quite a bit, because with emotionally abusive behavior, what I tell the victim of emotional abuse, especially near the beginning of a relationship, is that the faster you can catch bad behavior, hurtful behavior, the faster you catch that, and the immediacy in which you call it out, meaning you catch some behavior and you call it out, once it's called out, it's on the table. I like to put things on the table as soon as possible. So if somebody lies to you and you catch them in the lie, or they admit the lie, you put it on the table. Okay, this is on the table. This is tangible. This is something we can work with. You lied. Now what? They need to promise they'll never lie again, which hopefully isn't another lie. And if they lie again, what is your criteria? What is your qualifier for stopping things or changing things? Because that's what needs to happen, in my opinion. In my opinion, somebody gets a first chance. Okay, you screwed up. Let's try again. And they have to be remorseful. You know, if this is something they wronged you, something they did that they wronged you or they hurt you in some way, they have to be remorseful. And then they also have to say, I promise it'll never happen again. And they have to pull through. Because if it happens again, you need some sort of criteria that qualifies your next response. I don't know if I said that right, but the idea that you need to know specifically what criteria is going to be needed in order for you to say, yes, we'll try again, or no, this is it, it's over. So the way I look at it is, let's just say my girlfriend lied to me, and I said, that's not right. You know, I caught her. I said, that's not right. This can't happen. We need to have a relationship of trust and honesty and integrity. And if it happens again, that's my qualifying. That's my criteria. Is it going to happen again? I need to know. I'm going to ask her this. You know, you can't have this happen again. If it happens again, then we don't have trust. So I might be that direct, actually. But, you know, hopefully the conversation is going to be a lot more heartfelt. Hopefully it wasn't a terrible thing. Maybe it was just a small lie. Maybe it was something that we could get through. But let's just say she said, I promise, I'm so sorry, it won't happen again. I did it because of this, and it was stupid. You know, she claims this or admits this. It was stupid, and I shouldn't have done it, and I promise I won't do it again. Great. Now, for me to move forward, I have to trust that. This is part of my qualification process. I have to trust that she is telling the truth, because if I don't trust that, at least 98%, then it will be difficult for me to relax in the relationship. It'll be difficult for me to connect with her, because that'll always be in the back of my mind. Now, right after the event where she says, I promise it'll never happen again, I'm going to be suspicious, and I should be. You know, I believe you should be watching and being aware, being more observant, because now they have some making up to do. They have to catch up back to where they were. And catching up might mean doing a lot more to show that they are not that person anymore. And so what I would do in my own relationship is be very aware of what she's saying and how transparent she's being. Is she doing the same behavior as before? Is she making me suspicious of doing something that she did before? And if not, then I will slowly allow myself to trust her up to 100% again. And at that point, I can be comfortable again. But I keep in mind that if it ever happens again, then what am I going to do? I ask myself that question. What am I going to do if it happens again? And I think you need the answer to that question. You need to know what you'll do if it happens again. So if somebody wrongs you or hurts you, you need to know, A, will you give them a second chance? And B, what happens if they do it again? Now, the message I received that this is based on, it asks if a third chance was doable. I mean, do you think a third chance is possible? My answer to that is yes and no. If it's something that somebody did once and they promised they'd never do it again, and then they do something else once and they promise they won't do that again, then maybe there's a third chance. I mean, this is where you start to develop a pattern. We have to watch out for patterns. They may not do the exact same thing, which might cause you to give them some leniency. They may not do the very same thing, but it may be the start of a pattern. So if you're going to give someone a third chance because they didn't do the same thing, the third chance, I believe, kind of has to be the end of the line. It has to be like, okay, you've done this once, you did this once, and if you do something else, that's it. That'll be in your own head that you're thinking this. You don't necessarily have to tell them that. In fact, I recommend you don't. I recommend you don't say anything like this. You just keep it in your own mind. So they do one thing, then you give them a second chance because they promise they're not going to do it again. They do another thing, and you give them a third chance because they promise they won't do that again. But if they do another thing, consider it a pattern. You have to make this your criteria, that if they do something else along the same lines or maybe even different, but it's not good for your relationship with them, it's not good for you, it's hurtful, or it's just wrong in some way. If you see that and it's the third time, then they're either not trying or don't care or don't know they're doing the wrong thing and need to be educated. But for the third time, I think it's important to tell yourself, you know what, three times and you're out. I've given you three chances, which is probably one more chance than I should have given you. This can't continue. That's my criteria. It may sound harsh. There are probably a lot of exceptions to this rule, but I think in general, I think it's important to have some sort of criteria for yourself so that if this does go down again, that you know what to do. This is preparing in advance. They mess up once. Now, if they do the same thing a second time, this is one of those, if you fool me once, shame on me. You fool me twice, shame on you. That's where I go with it. You fool me once with one thing, and now you apologize for it and promise it'll never happen again. But if it happens again, that's where I say, sorry, I can't do this anymore. Now, this doesn't mean it won't lead to a conversation. What if they say, oh my God, you're so right. I'm so sorry. This will never happen again. And I promise it won't because I'm going to get therapy. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. That could happen. Could be a lie, but that could happen. And maybe your heart is big enough to try one more time. And maybe that one more time will be all you need to make this thing work, whatever it is. But just be very wary. I mean, you're going to be, you're going to have your watchdog watching, you know, the watchdog of your mind watching so that you don't get hurt again. You don't want to be wronged. You don't want to be hurt. And you might have something good with somebody and you don't want to lose that. So you might try this, but be very careful. You know, after the third time, I believe you have to cut the cord and move on. And that might be hard to hear because maybe you have an investment in this relationship and it's hard to do. I don't want to move on. I invested so much in this relationship and we're committed and all this stuff. But what are you doing? You are allowing someone who does this behavior to continue to be in your life. And because of that, what ends up happening is that they usually repeat it after that many times because they get away with it. And this is what I talk about with emotionally abusive relationships. They start behaviors, and what ends up happening is they repeat certain behaviors or do behaviors that lead to a pattern, and you don't stop the pattern. And over again, I hear from the victims of emotional abuse that tell me they do this all the time. They did this one thing, and then this other thing, and then this other thing, and then they repeated the first thing, and they kept going and going and going. And I tell them, unfortunately, because you're still in the relationship, whether it's friend, family, relationship, or romantic, because you're still in that relationship with them, the accountability didn't happen. They didn't lose you from that relationship. They just kept doing what was hurtful or harmful, and you're still there. And that is the accountability. And if there's not enough accountability, they're not going to change. They get away with it. That's basically what it comes down to. So when you're giving someone a second or a third chance, remember that when there's no accountability, it's permission. And that's really what it comes down to. And I'm not trying to make it so simple, but boy, that's memorable. If there's no accountability, that means you've given permission. That doesn't mean you're allowing it. That doesn't mean it's your fault, but it is your responsibility to look at what's happening and realize that as long as there's no accountability, they will continue to do that. And there's just no stopping it from that point on because, again, I've seen this in relationships a lot. I've seen that the behavior continues as long as the other person doesn't leave. You could cry, you can be unhappy, you can really be angry, and it's still not enough accountability. So this may apply to you, it may not. It may apply to any situation where you're giving someone a second or a third chance, but don't let it get to a fourth chance. And I know it's hard because some relationships are already established. Some relationships are years and years old. And you might tell me, oh, they've done it 1,000 times. They've lied to me. I've heard this before. They've lied to me 1,000 times. And I think to myself, wow, that's not good. Because if they've lied to you 1,000 times, then what are you expecting to happen next? They're not going to tell the truth suddenly unless they have some enlightening moment. But you can't expect something that hasn't happened to happen. You can't expect somebody to change if they've never changed. They're going to show up as they are and continue to show up as they are because the loss in their life hasn't been enough. The accountability may be not talking to them, but that's not accountable enough. A lot of people will continue to do the things they do, the hurt and the harm and the toxic behavior, because the other person is still in their life. That doesn't mean I'm saying you should leave. That doesn't mean I'm saying you should end whatever relationship this is. I'm just saying that you have to be careful that you're not giving inadvertent permission to someone to do bad behavior. And if you are, you have to maybe figure out what you need to do differently. And that might mean saying, hey, if this happens again, this is it. It's over. If you lie to me one more time, it's over. You've lied to me 1,000 times and I'm done. In my Healed Being program, I talk about the threshold. The threshold is when someone has had enough. If you're an emotionally abusive person or a difficult person, or you're making someone feel bad, and whether intentionally or not, they're going to get to a point where they've had enough. They have reached their threshold. When they reach their threshold, you're going to know. They're going to tell you that they've had enough and it's over. Or they're going to say, if anything like this ever happens again, I'm done. And you're going to see some uncharacteristically different behaviors from someone who's reached their threshold. They may have been forgiving and permissive and submissive and allowing you to do so many things, but suddenly they don't anymore. And you're thinking, who are you? You've changed. What's going on? And maybe this isn't you. Maybe this is somebody else thinking that about you. You've changed. What's going on? Who are you? And then they'll get mad at you for not allowing them to continue to do their behaviors because you're not allowing them to do their behaviors. You're not allowing them to show up in a way that is hurtful or harmful to you anymore. And that's a good thing. I believe that's a good thing. So for anyone that is thinking about second chances or third chances, I'm all for second chances because we all screw up. I'm sometimes for third chances as long as it's not the same error, mistake, or intention. I am not for fourth chances because that tells me there's a pattern. There's a pattern emerging here, and I don't want to be a part of that pattern. You go take that pattern away, do what you want with it, but I don't want that pattern in my life. And so this is where you stand up for yourself and don't allow certain things in your life. And again, I know you might be in a relationship now where those patterns have been going on for many years. And what do you do? Well, this is where you start to decide what you want in your life. Do I want this pattern in my life anymore? Am I going to allow it? And you might think, well, I can't allow or disallow. It just happens. And I know there are relationships you really can't change, but I do believe you have to start thinking about what needs to change so that you don't expect anything else but what you're getting. What you have gotten will be what you continue to get. Unless there's some major enlightenment or the person gets help or whatever it is, you have to expect what has happened will continue to happen. This is the trend line. The trend line is either going up and to the right and everyone's good, or steady to the right and everyone's good, or it went down and stayed there, and what you've had will be what you continue to get. The trend equals the future. That's how I look at things. It doesn't mean it's always true, but it sure makes me feel more in control of my life. Not that it's 100% possible, but it makes me feel better knowing that I am eliminating possible harm or probable harm to my life because I don't allow trends to continue, or at least negative trends. If the negative trend is there, I will make a course correction. I will pivot. I will change what's going on in my life so that that negative trend ends. Or at least I'll do my best to start changing course. Just like a aircraft carrier can take miles to turn around because the aircraft carrier is huge. And some commitments we've made are big. They're long-term commitments. And in order to turn that around to pivot course, it might take a while. But you got to start somewhere. You got to start turning the wheel right or left. Start somewhere so that you can start making plans for a new direction in your life, if you want to. This is all optional, of course. But I will say this. As long as you know what behavior to expect and you don't expect any other type of behavior, and you don't constantly worry about it because you know what to expect, then you could probably tolerate it. I don't like the idea of tolerating someone's behavior. I like the idea of not experiencing it all. But as long as you know what to expect and don't expect anything better or anything different, then it can be tolerable. You just have to accept that that person may never, ever change. And hopefully the people in your life are wonderful. And with holidays coming up, because this is recorded at the end of November, if you're experiencing the holidays, if you celebrate, then you might have to experience some stressful moments with family or anyone else that is around you in the holidays. And maybe it won't be stressful. Maybe it'll be wonderful. So as you go into the following days and weeks, just remember that some people can change, some people can't change, and you just have to understand who can and who can't and accept if they can or can't, so that you can make decisions that are right for you. I appreciate you. Thanks for tuning in today. We'll be right back with my thank yous and my goodbyes and my final words right after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank everyone who's written to this show, and I've never replied I apologize. I get a lot of emails. I do read everything that comes through. So if you've ever written to the show, believe me, I've seen it. And the subject matter that you hear on the show is based on a lot of the messages that I get. So keep listening, because I may be talking about a subject matter that you brought up. And I do apologize that I don't write back to everyone. Sometimes I do, sometimes I can't. But I just want to let you know that I am getting your messages, and all the writing that you do doesn't go to waste. I do read everything I receive. So thank you all. And if you're looking for a show on how to deal with difficult relationships, you heard me mention it earlier. It's loveandabuse.com. That is my other podcast. I deal with difficult relationships and toxic communication and poisonous behavior. Not necessarily in that order, but I cover almost everything that has to do with dealing with a difficult relationship. And if you are the difficult one in the relationship and you want to change that and have the perfect formula for the strongest, longest lasting relationships possible, head over to healedbeing.com. That's a very comprehensive, very thorough program that I give you just about everything you need to know on how to create the strongest relationships possible by not showing up as that difficult person. And I help you with coping mechanisms, emotional triggers, all kinds of things over there that can really mess up something good in your life. So that's over at healedbeing.com if you're looking for something like that. And finally, I'd like to thank Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And for my final words, I actually received an email a while back that asked about starting their own show or their own blog or some channel of growing a following or sharing what they know with the world, like I do here. I share what I know with you because I want to believe it's helpful. And this is what this person wrote. They want to help people. They want to help people get through their challenges. And I believe if you have anything to share with somebody, that it's important to get it out there, because where is it going to go? Is it going to go in a book, or is it going to stay in your brain? And are you only going to help one person at a time? And you're absolutely allowed to do that. You can absolutely do that. But sometimes you have information that could be very helpful to other people. And this is what this person wants to do. He wants to help other people. And that's what he was asking me. He's like, okay, do I get a microphone? Do I get a camera? What do I do? And I started off blogging back in 2013. I have my blog, theoverwhelmedbrain.com. And that has just continued to grow and grow. But I also started podcasting 6 months later. And that has been my vehicle. That has been my way of spreading my words, my teachings. And I've been doing that ever since. And I believe that is where I feel most comfortable. So it really depends on where you feel most comfortable, and also where you can get comfortable. Because sometimes you start something and it's not comfortable, but you repeat what you're doing over and over again and it gets more comfortable. And that's perfectly normal. You know, you don't start off knowing how to ride a bike until you start riding a bike and getting more and more comfortable. If you want a real challenge, if you've never ridden a skateboard, get on a skateboard and see how long it takes to finally get your balance and, you know, don't break any bones while you do it. The idea is that the more you do something, the more comfortable you get with it. So I'll give you one tip. If you want to be a creator, if you want to share what you know with the world and you have a subject in mind, then what I would recommend you do is something that I still do to this day. Sometimes I'll get on the microphone and I'll talk about everything or nothing on my mind. Now, why am I doing that? What I'm saying is, if I'm stuck, like if I don't know how to begin something or begin talking about something, I'll just talk. And a lot of this doesn't get on the air. A lot of this is me revving up. It's priming. So let's just say that I wanted to talk about like depression. Today I talked about depression. So I might start recording and say something like, I was depressed back in 2005. My girlfriend broke up with me and I just got depressed because I was sad and I didn't know how to handle it. And my only source of happiness was her. And I'll start recalling what it felt like and what was happening around that time. And as I talk, basically almost rambling, as I keep talking, it turns into something. It forms into something. And this is an exercise I do to help me with any creative blocks, is that I will just talk about what's on my mind. I might even start recording just saying that I have nothing on my mind. Right now I'm recording, I have nothing on my mind, and I'll also talk about how I feel and what else I'm thinking. So I'll go, I have nothing on my mind, and I feel kind of weird because here I am recording nothing. I'm just recording a stream of thought, and I'm moving my hand while I talk, and it's an interesting thing because who moves their hands while they talk, and why do we move our hands while we talk? And I'll keep talking like this until a subject matter forms. This is, in my opinion, one of the best ways to get past a creative block. If you don't know what to say, if you don't know what to write, if you don't know what to say on video or audio, and you need to do something, this is how I do it. This is my preparation sometimes. Most of the time I don't have to do this. It's pretty natural now, but this is, man, I did this a lot. I did this a lot for the first few years of my podcast. Just come on the air and just start talking. And then when I get to that subject matter, because this is what happens, I go, oh, I'm waving my hand, I'm talking. And you know what's interesting is that we use our hands because we also use our eyes when we're talking, and we use our body, and we have language because we didn't always have verbal language and we want to convey information. So I might start talking like that. I might go into that subject matter, or I might go into another subject matter. But the point is that the subject matter really manifests itself as I ramble. And I think this is a very good creative exercise if you have a creative block. Like if you're writing a book and it's about a ghost ship or a romance, you can start writing rambling. And it could be a stream of thought. Here I am, writing nothing. I feel silly for writing nothing, but here I am. Paul told me to write nothing, and I'm writing nothing as I go, or I'm typing this. It's funny that I'm typing this because it reminds me back in 1989 when I was typing, oh, wait a minute, I can go somewhere with this. This is great. That's what happens to me. It always reminds me of something. It always brings up a thought that turns into a subject that I can talk about. That's for the creative block. You know, when I'm feeling blocked and I don't know how to start something, or I don't know what to talk about, which is rare because I get a lot of emails, so I always know what to talk about. But sometimes I'll start that way and see where it goes, and then when it turns into something, I'll go with it. And then it usually turns into an hour-long show. But I change the subject every now and then, which you know if you've been listening. If you haven't been listening, keep listening, because I'm going to give you little tidbits like this once every 2 or 3 years. So you got to listen. You got to keep listening and always keep an open mind, because sometimes I'll say things that you'll think, huh? And you'll scratch your head and you'll wonder, is that even useful? And I'll say, yes, yes, it's useful. You can take it with you. I promise it'll be useful someday. And then you might think, yeah, but that may never be useful. That doesn't apply to me at all. And then I'll say, no, someday it will. And then someday you'll think, oh, I'm so glad he said that 3 years ago, because now it's the time. Now is the time I can use this, and I am so grateful. I'm grateful for you. I am so glad that you're going to keep an open mind as you move forward, because that's what helps you step into your power. I know that you can do this, because by keeping an open mind, that helps you be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.